Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. November 10th, 2024, episode 161. I'm talking about the psychology of going from one permaculture project site to the next under the circumstances of it being where you're going to be posted up, where you're going to be dwelling, and for however long, whether it's a day, a week, a month, a year, or the rest of your life. For me, once I have a sense of the site, the pressure begins to say to myself what has to be done to accelerate or optimize the food production systems and the emergency supplies, water, medicine, energy, etc. The survival needs, which there are many lists of. Shelter, if you want to go in my order, it would be shelter, water, well actually security, shelter, water, food, energy, medicine, communications, and then less critical nice to haves further down that list. But those are the main ones that I tend to think about if I'm not forgetting anything off that list. But getting that stuff squared away, assessing what's in place and what needs to be acquired, and then looking into the budget and looking into procurement, logistics, all that kind of stuff. For me, because I have the survivalist background, getting to a project site, the pressure begins. What's the season, and what season are we aiming for? When is the growing season start or end? How reliant can we become on the production of this ecosystem as fast as possible? Because for me, even if it's not the prerogative of whoever owns the site that I'm on, I take it for granted that I am one of the very few people in the United States, not in the world, because there's a lot more people in the world, but in the United States, it is the prerogative of most people to procure their food, water, but basically the supplies, the supply lines. It's their prerogative to have it be on what you would call a just-in-time basis, meaning minimal storage, minimal production. Even people who enjoy gardening, it's almost symbolic, or it's a fraction of the food supply into the home or into the workplace or facility or whatever it is that the site is being designed. Rarely are you going to find a place that says within the site map, within the borders of this parcel, we're either 100% independent with everything that we subsist on, or our intention is to get to that not just eventually, but now, yesterday. So I know for myself, I come to whatever property I'm on with the agenda of 100% self-sufficiency, self-reliance, sustainability yesterday. And if you do that too heavy-handed, or you do that too aggressively, you're going to lose friends and you're not going to be welcome, you're not going to be invited back. The nuance and the sort of grace, the tact in that is to say, meet people where they're at and bring them what they want, introduce some things that you might want. But the interesting thing that I'm touching on here is this dynamic of, well, if I'm going to be here and I can't impose things that may not be wanted, but that I know are necessities. For example, I have my own food, my own med, my own water, my own communications, my own power. I'm self-contained within my truckstead of all those survival needs for quite a bit of time. I would say 6 months to a year if we're measuring the food, and then water filtration, rainwater catchment, the potential to store at least several months of water, depending on how I use it. So let's just say 3 months to 3 to 12 months at any given time, I'm definitely rolling with 3 to 12 months of completely self-sufficient, self-contained ecology for myself. But when I go post up somewhere, I also have to consider that my preps and resources would rightly be surrendered to a collectivity wherever I end up. So if I want to buffer that, I got to scale up their preps and scale up their food production to where they're not relying on my finite supply. And I'm, as a mobile truckster from going from one project site to another, I should be working with clients. I should be working with whoever's managing the sites to be able to say, I have very limited space to do what I do. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but here's a strategy that I would propose for scaling up the water storage that you have, scaling up the food storage you have, scaling up the garden space that you have, the square footage, scaling up the rainwater catchment, mostly on their behalf. Whoever the client is, wherever it is, that just can always be scaled up. No matter how rich or poor or what the climate is, there's always a reason to have, and it, the climate obviously can have a, can determine some of the, what gets scaled up in what order and the priorities of that. But I definitely have to address this feeling that I get when I set foot on a property that I'm going to work on, and I'm doing it from my mobile truckstead with my tools and my food and all the stuff I mentioned. That sense of my, I have energy that comes from this powerful source of get things established immediately, as soon as possible, as safely as possible. But that's when the 12-hour plus work days come out of me year round. No matter what, if it's the middle of the summer, if I have to take breaks, if I have to work in the shade or build shade, if I have to bathe more and even adjust my diet to prevent candida growth and fungal growth, because I'll be out there sweating in the sun and working, and I'll be blistering and I'll be chafing and whatnot. So I have to be very careful about how many carbs I eat and the sugar in my blood. I don't want to be feeding what would be taking over in those places of cracked and blistered and scraped skin. But there is a beast mode that comes out of me when I set foot somewhere and I go, this, we need to scale up these things. We need to, maybe some things are all right, maybe some things can wait or are perfectly fine the way they are, but for most of us, I think we could all admit that every area would be better to be scaled up if it were to happen that we couldn't just go out and buy whatever we want from wherever we want, either because of personal financial reasons or supply chain disruptions from the weather or from civil unrest, whatever those factors are that are relevant to each site and each person and every individual and every human social organizational unit, family, business, whatever it is. There'll be a different set of risk factors, but I'm the one who is thinking about what happens on this site, XYZ site. What happens on this site if the power goes out, if the roads are blocked? How many days forward do we have? What is the calculation that we're going to use to know how many days forward we have? If the lifestyle of long-term food storage and lifestyle of large volumes of water storage properly in a way that can be filtered or decontaminated, etc., filtration and disinfection are the right words. Those are all the things that I take note of and that I'm wanting to optimize. And it's this beast mode energy is what's so fascinating to me, because I look back and I look back at some of the things that I will have installed during that phase of beast mode, where I was just tunnel vision on this stuff has got to get corrected, optimized, cleaned out. So I'm cleaning things. I'm just digging up buried treasures on a site, liberating different tools and things that are overgrown, and just organizing and inventorying everything. And that gust of energy, yeah, I can be in that beast mode. I get adequate rest. Of course, I prioritize adequate rest, but working as long in the day as I can, taking whatever breaks I need to take, but doing that triage of getting a site as optimized as it can be within the budget, so that at least the most catastrophic mishaps, the most catastrophic deficiencies can be shored up within reason, within budget. And then often you find that there's a lot of miscellanea on a site that can be repurposed or put to use to optimize and scale up some of these systems, things that are capable of storing water or air or materials that could be used to build garden beds so you don't have to buy everything and have it be a glut of a budget or a budgetary bottleneck, if you will. That it is a permaculture way to assess and take inventory of all of the potentially reusable materials on a site, even stuff that was thought to be trash, and even pulling it straight out of the trash can. Believe me, I've done that so many times. And I'm building a nursery out of cut plastic bottles of water or other beverages or other food condiment containers, and just bootstrapping a nursery operation with scrap materials and straight out of the trash can. It's not permanent, aesthetically speaking, for most people, most places, but it is, you do what you got to do, because you got to get that arsenal of seedlings in place as soon as possible, like I said yesterday. So the point of me sharing this is to say, anybody listening to this at any time, I hope it is a reminder to pause and make an assessment of the places that you frequent, your home, your workplace. If you're a survivalist and you have a bug out retreat, or you just own secondary properties and you never thought of it that way, of needing to go and, quote, bug out there, retreat in an emergency. Any place that you have any influence and control over can be assessed and can be optimized and scaled up in terms of having those basic survival needs in place. And the permaculture strategies make it even more interesting, more ecologically rich, more alive, more truly sustainable than just storing food, storing water, storing seeds. Actually put it to work and make an ecosystem that's far more resilient than just the things that you have in boxes and bags. To really tap into that sense of urgency that, as an outsider, you come in and there's all kinds of complacency and there's all kinds of with all clients, just accepting things as they are, having adapted to it, and you don't wake up every day in your normal routine and think about, how can I innovate and optimize and tweak all these different parameters of everything? That's for someone, an outside consultant, to come in and, again, with tact and with patience and with understanding and not being too aggressive with what you would impose. But this is the dynamic is different, is that if in the days where I would do consulting and I would go back to wherever I was living or go live, basically I wasn't posted up there. Now my paradigm has been, it's actually been like this for quite a while, years even, where it's like, whenever possible, if I'm going to do dedicated permaculture design and install work, I'm going to want to be posted up on the site. I don't want to commute if I can help it. So that means I'm part of the emergency plan. I'm part of the survival plan. I'm there. I've got survival needs. And whoever else is there that's the actual owners or the people living there or running it, whatever the circumstances may be, there becomes a dynamic of me taking responsibility for them and them taking somewhat of a responsibility for me. Again, I take it to the extreme, so I dial in things for myself more than most people care to for themselves. So it's an a la carte. It's an a la carte menu. This is what I do. This is how I do it. If you want to put money into this project, cool, we'll prioritize that. But either way, we're getting a nursery going. We're cleaning things up. We're inventorying things. We're building things. And then planting what folks want to plant, and then on the side I'll make sure that everyone is getting what they want going out of me first and foremost, and then where there's extra space, that's where I will assert my gentle selection of crops that I want to subsist on and survive on, and that I want to see established, and maybe that I want to take with me from the nursery. So I can have my little cut of the operation to live on and to take with me as I continue to roll out and scale out different strongholds in my life, where it's like okay, if I'm going to go and I'm going to post up and I'm going to establish them in this place, then I want them to be thriving if and when I come back, and do the same thing, and then create for myself a node, a network of nodes where I can have the confidence and the faith and the trust that even without a lot of extra input, or even if it was totally neglected, even if I had to dig for it or clear brush or weeds to find it, that, oh, that's where I planted that perennial plant and now it needs a little more light and water and soil amendments and whatnot, but it's there. It's been established. So to me, that's what it's all about, is feeling that pressure to establish systems and establish crops and have it be beneficial and permitted and welcomed by the host site, if you will. But it's deeper for me now, since I don't have to go and work for strangers. If I'm going to work on sites of people that are not strangers, but are people that I care about and want to stay connected with, then I'm going to go through these protocols and optimize and enhance and clean up what already is happening with their direction, with their prerogatives and objectives and prioritize that. And then with whatever physical space and mental, emotional bandwidth, whatever finances, whatever is left that is auxiliary to their primary agenda, then that's the playground I have to establish what I want to establish and to get things going in a nursery, and then just continue to suggest things, and even when appropriate, bring in my own resources and say, you know what, hey, I'll put this here if you'll take care of it, and then we'll share it, stuff like that. So to me, that's another, it's just a powerful way of looking at doing permaculture design work as a nomad and being out there in service and finding those synergies and always being ready to know when I hit that ground, I'm going to start going into beast mode, and then look back after hours, days, weeks, months, or years and go, wow, that, I don't know where that energy came from, but it was that we needed to get this stuff established yesterday, and I was that force from the outside that had the vision and the training and the skills and the tools and the freedom and the perspective to be able to have a fresh perspective and have fresh energy and to help shed light on those blind spots and just organize the process and be a good conductor of time and energy and respecting where people are at and what time and energy they have to devote. That's part of the designer's questionnaire. Any site that you would work on, you would go through that checklist, which I designed a custom checklist of sorts where you interview clients and let's understand this. What do you want to have going on, and how many hours a week do you want to apply yourself? So I know not to bite off more than I can chew, or not to serve more than any more, to moderate the servings of what people are going to have to put on their plate, because a lot of people's plates are already full. So you show up and you go, let's do all this stuff and transform everything, and it actually becomes a headache or burdensome, or it's just beyond the scope of time that people have to do gardening as a hobby. So they would need someone to live in and maintain, establish and maintain and develop and troubleshoot, etc., whatever this be installed. A point to make is why I like to rely on very robust and resilient self-cleaning, self-maintaining or ecological systems, not so much a lot of artificial, plastic, synthetic, lots of moving parts, lots of points of failure, or meet more like single points of failure on lots of moving parts, or systems that are just technical and mechanical. You can't easily, they're unforgiving, like aquaponic systems versus a ecosystem pond would be one area where establishing a pure natural ecology that does all of its own work is to me preferable to a bunch of parts that can break, and if one of them breaks, the whole system dies. So some thoughts there on cultivating and harvesting the energy and the drive and the focus, and hopefully anyone who's out there in this field, you know what I'm talking about, and you go, wow, I see this place, and I see the potential, and I see the pain points, and we're talking about the pain points, and it's a dialogue, and then you just want to For your own sake and for their sake, get as many of those important basic survival need meeting systems in place and whatever, as fast as you can, comfortably, without causing friction with personalities or with budgets. And that's why you can be a hero and a rock star if you can make aesthetic upcycling on site with the materials that are there. And that's what I take the most pride in. You can't always guarantee that the plantings are going to do well in the soil that's barely been touched in years, or that's compacted, or that's toxic, or whatever. You can't be certain that all of your horticultural efforts are going to bear fruit even. But what you can be certain of is building the hardscape, doing the infrastructure in a way that is ergonomic and flows with the patterns of life, and that is beautiful and welcoming, and is also conducive to a property being sold. It's another factor a lot of people have that they have to consider is, well, I could tolerate the aesthetics of this upcycled thing you built, but I got to be thinking about, what about selling it in the future or renting it or whatever? Are people going to feel the way I do about it? It's this rustic, charming sort of aesthetic that not everybody's going to share. So there's, of course, factors like that. So then, can it be built to be compliant with everyone's aesthetic tastes? Maybe. Or if not, can it be disassembled and gotten rid of without it being a burden to the client? Because I've had situations before where someone was thrilled about something I installed for a minute, and then once it became burdensome on their lifestyle, then they thought of it as a nuisance and eyesore, and they resented me for even bringing it in the first place. And I was a friend and it was a gift, but they ended up resenting it because they told me they had to clean it up, they had to remove it themselves, and they ended up falling out of love with it. So again, it's like cradle to grave maintenance to do any of this stuff. And it's a habit of mine to say, okay, maybe we did all these things and it was great and we established all things, but if I'm going to leave, and I may come back soon, I may come back later, never come back, what have I done here that you would like to have removed before I leave, just so you know you never have to think about it? Is there anything that I moved or changed or that I'm leaving behind, or that you, because that's, I want the clean conscience with all this stuff. That's what matters to me. One of the things that matters the most is making sure that I help permaculture have a good name wherever I go, and another black eye, because that happens too often, where we give ourselves a black eye. So hopefully that's some good energy, some good positive vibes, and I hope you kind of reconnect with that invigoration, either on your own property or if you're working on other people's properties, and put that, see through that lens and put that hat on of the urgency to get the survival needs optimized and scaled up. Cheers.